Great. You know, yesterday I hinted at the very end that I was going to do something a little different tonight. And so tonight what we're going to do is we're going to have a scripture journal conversation. And I'm just going to sit with a couple of the guys tonight, Pastor John, Pastor Chris, and we're going to, in our living room here, we're going to have a conversation built around our devotional times as we've been reading through presently 2 Timothy and also the book of Ecclesiastes in our Bible bus calendar of readings. Guys, I believe that the book of Ecclesiastes is such a timely place to find ourselves in our COVID-19 world, because so much of the book of Ecclesiastes has to do with the way we interpret life in a broken world. It addresses like, well, why is this happening? Or how did we get to this place? Or where is this all heading? Or where am I going to end up? In fact, just on a reading on the 18th, yesterday, Saturday, the preacher, who I believe to be Solomon, he says, this is an evil that I've seen under the sun, and it lies heavy on mankind. And it talks about how man having wealth, but not having the power to enjoy it, right? And sometimes we can see that happens through circumstances. And one of the headlines today was just the fact that people who have barrels of crude oil are giving them away. Yeah. People are driving so little now that the reserves of oil globally are so massive that they can't sell them to anybody. They actually have to pay people to take pay. So people who have their money in their stocks and their portfolios and those things, they're going, man, I worked my lifetime to get this thing in my stocks and so on, and now all that's gone.
What a great problem to have, though, for those who drive.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if they're going to pay us to get gas. When are they going to give us pay at the gas pump kind of a thing? So anyway, this book is so incredibly timely. Now, this is really important because for a lot of people, they read the book of Ecclesiastes and they're going, well, wait a minute, that's not exactly what it says in the rest of the Bible. Is this like, are all these truisms? What is this? So we need to understand that the majority of what the author of Ecclesiastes said was processed through the grid of a very specific worldview. And I'm going to get to that worldview in just a moment. But the author, whom I believe to be Solomon, identifies himself as a preacher. And as we've been reading our way through the first 8 chapters as of today, he's definitely been preaching to us. And so we should read the book of Ecclesiastes like a sermon. Now, when you and I sit and listen to someone preach, we listen with some understanding of the person's point of view. Where's he living? What's his life experience look like? Some understanding of this is who this guy is and this is where he's coming from. And then as we listen, we know that the particular details of his preaching, they're building towards a conclusion. Ecclesiastes is pretty much an autobiographical sermon. Solomon is preaching about things that are absolutely crucial for life, and he does it by way of his incredibly transparent personal testimony. And that's critical for us to grasp and understand and apply what the preacher is delivering. Solomon takes us on a crazy journey through his life experiences. And no matter how crazy his thinking was at any point in his testimony, so when you come across some things and go, that doesn't sound like the Solomon who penned the book of Proverbs. Well, just remember that his thinking at that point, that was real about his story. And no matter how many weird conclusions he came to along the way, those were not final conclusions. Like, we're going to see one of his first conclusions as we have this conversation tonight, but it's not the final conclusion. Everything in his sermon is leading to the 13th verse of the 12th chapter when he essentially says, here's the conclusion of the whole matter. And it's on your screen for you, Ecclesiastes 12:13. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Everything to understand life is tied to a vertical axis. Everything is processed by way of understanding who God is. Even as we were singing this song, the song about our lives being like the alabaster box poured out on the feet of Jesus. And I just was thinking of those lyrics, and it was so tied into what we're looking at in terms of the worldview that Solomon is processing life and trying to understand life through here, because what we're seeing is that we really do understand that in every moment, every minute, every part of our lives, it is a vertical exchange. We are tied to a relationship with the Lord. In our lives, no matter what the circumstances are, that's the context for our sacrifice of praise. Us worshiping God with all that we are and all that we do, all that we could ever hope to become in every circumstance of life. So, Solomon says a lot of things that contradict what's said elsewhere in the scriptures, but we have to read them in the context of where he was, or better yet, where he wasn't in his relationship with the Lord. And he describes the world that all of us see, that all of us live in, that all of us experience. But he's looking at it as a man who thinks and lives as if at those moments in his life, God wasn't in the picture. God didn't matter. A key to understanding how Solomon arrives at his conclusions is in his constant use of this phrase. It's the phrase that's on your screen, under the sun. He uses that phrase 29 times. And when we read that phrase, he's telling us that he's trying to understand life from ground level. Everything he's processing is life under the sun. He's talking about finding the meaning in life on the basis of what we can see in the creative world, in the created world, in the material world. He's processing life without any vertical point of reference. He draws his conclusions about life with no regard for the eternal and no ultimate accountability to God. And that is the life under the sun worldview. No regard for the eternal. And how many of the songs that we sang tonight were all with an eye on the eternal? Right? No regard for the eternal and no ultimate accountability to God for our lives. In light of that, we can say that Ecclesiastes is filled with what we might call, again on your screen, true lies. Now follow me here. Looking at the world from that perspective that God doesn't matter, life is temporal, there'll be no answering to God, it is true. All is vanity. And by the way, that word vanity, that's another one of his favorite words, and it means a mere breath, a puff of air. You can never get a hold of it. It's the nearest thing to zero. Like we know, obviously we have some rules now, right? And the reason we try to stay 6 feet away is because we know that there is something coming out, right? There is something coming out of our mouths, the breath that's coming out. But it's the closest thing to nothing that we can get to. And then when he says vanity of vanities, it means it's the ultimate can never get a hold of. It really is the ultimate zero. But because that worldview is wrong, because the premise is false, it's not true that all is vanity. Guys, it's only the life lived without God that is vanity. It's only the life lived without God that's a mere breath, a puff of air that escapes, that you can never get a hold of, the ultimate zero. So Solomon, in Ecclesiastes, he takes us on a long journey. But that journey is to help us think through just how wrong the life under the sun worldview is. So with that little introduction, and I pray that's going to help you finish out your readings through Ecclesiastes and really kind of going, oh, I can go back, I remember these things now, and that's how I'm supposed to look and understand what this guy was trying to say to us in those words, in those summations, and those like, well, this is what it really is. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to kind of start turning away from you here, and I'm going to start turning to these guys, and we don't have, by the way, I don't know which way I'm looking now, but I'm going to be looking at you guys, I guess.
Okay.
We're kind of new at this stuff.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. We don't have a plan. Our plan is to have a conversation. And conversations just, they have, somebody starts one somewhere. So here's how I'm going to start. Chris, if in terms of Ecclesiastes chapter 1, all three of us are going to have places we've highlighted, we've scribbled notes on. You know, I've got the digital version of my scribbled notes. I know they've got their versions of their notes from just their devotions and their thoughts around those things. So, Chris, in chapter 1, what are the first things you highlighted, and what did they say to you?
Yeah, the first thing I noticed jumping into chapter 1 is what a sharp contrast that is from the last chapter in Proverbs 31.
Yeah.
You know, in Proverbs 31, Proverbs is such a great book in the sense it's constantly talking about the wisdom of God and how we're supposed to live for that purpose, walking in the wisdom of the Lord and also in the fear of the Lord. I mean, it gives very practical things, right, about relationships and business and life and raising your children and all these different aspects. And it leaves you kind of, when you leave Proverbs, you're like, I have some great tools in my tool belt. And then you come to Ecclesiastes chapter 1, and you're like, this is a sharp contrast, almost a negative.
Yeah.
Even if you just take the last chapter of Proverbs 31, talking about the Proverbs 31 woman, and then you jump into the, you know, the chapter 1, and then all of a sudden he's talking about how the world turns, there's all this change, people are born, they die, and it has a very bleak outlook.
Yeah, fatalist.
Very fitting. So one that you see, one is obviously vertically oriented, like you talked about, and then here he really is looking at the landscape of life, of humanity, through eyes that have experienced life, have experienced struggle. Whereas in Proverbs, you get this idea that if you do what Proverbs tells you, if you follow what God says, kind of like in Deuteronomy where it says if you're obedient, then you'll receive blessing.
Yep.
That's the kind of what you feel when you leave Proverbs. But all of a sudden, you get in Ecclesiastes, and it's almost like he's looking at the writer of Proverbs, going, not so much.
Doesn't it blow your mind that it's the same guy?
The same guy.
And that, like, it's possible to be that guy and end up like this guy.
Yeah.
But praise the Lord, the story's not over.
Right.
And that's part of the beauty of having an eternal view on things. But as you're talking, Chris, it made me think, like, man,
yeah,
what a sharp contrast. And we can be that same. We need,
yeah,
and we need to guard our own hearts, and we need to be praying and loving on one another to keep us from, like, becoming that detached from what we know to be true.
Right. And it's not a big step. It really isn't a big step to go from what we see in Proverbs,
yeah,
to what we see in Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
I think even if you read in chapter 31, supposedly it would be Bathsheba speaking to Lemuel or Samuel, and she says, hey, don't give your strength to women and don't drink. And it's like, in
oops,
Ecclesiastes, it's like, I did what mom said not to do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. He drank the dregs.
Yeah, right? He did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John, how about you?
You know, I love Ecclesiastes because it's like a philosophical fist fight, right? He just jumps into some of the most moral things of evil and suffering and why, and is it empty? Is there meaning? So I love that. And also, Ecclesiastes has been something that's directed my life twice in a very unique personal way. One of them actually to Northern California, and we'll get into that later if there's time, or another one of these. But
yeah.
So I love Ecclesiastes. I think the older I get, I see this, like, as I started to read it again, I see, like, this older man that's brutally honest. He's practical. He's a bit cynical. But it gives us a really visceral, gut, street-level wisdom that's like, been there, done that, and this is what you're going to get if you go there. And so when I open it up, I really, as I get older, I've noticed that I really do love it because it's immediately practical. And like I said, you look around and you, as you're reading that, and it is, it really gives you a perspective of somebody that followed their own desires, did what, you know, they weren't supposed to do, and then speaks to us. So
and again, the beauty, that the end part of what you were talking about, John, you're saying he did wrestle with all this stuff. There was a point,
totally,
where he just kind of just threw it down and said, this really stinks.
Yeah.
Because he'd lost sight of the eternal. He'd lost sight of Yahweh.
Yeah.
But it's not the fight that's the fail.
No.
It isn't. It's like, you know, God can see you through all of those things. And so when we know people who are struggling, like with a person that we know, like, oh, dude, he was Solomon and now he's the preacher.
Yeah.
He's the preacher in chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes. You know, he's not across, but we can know that God is going to, God can get that guy.
Sure.
God can get that guy so he can one day go, you know, when you're thinking like this, this is what it's going to look like, and don't do that.
Right.
So praise the Lord for that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was just thinking as you're talking, if this is Solomon, I wonder where this was in his life. Was it as a young man? Was it later on in life? Did he actually turn back to the Lord? Because we read that last verse in Ecclesiastes chapter 12,
yeah,
and it talks about this is really the end of man, right? This is what we should be doing. But I've always wondered as I read through that, is that really his heart? Did he turn back to the Lord in the latter part of his life? We just don't know. But obviously he went through a really hard time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I look at the first couple of verses here, you know, he starts out with his, you know, the vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Verse 3, when he says, what does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? And, you know, I was writing different things and thinking different things, and it really hit me this morning. It was like, well, wait a minute. What an interesting starting point. What does man get?
Mm-hmm.
What does man get? And it really hit me that, like, if you don't start with an eye on the eternal, and the fact that we are accountable to the one who is eternal, you know,
yeah,
then we're only left with us. That's our that's our starting point. It's our ending point. And life is always going to be, well, what do I get?
Disappointing.
Yeah. What do I get? And not only the sense of disappointment, but it's like the whole thing is about what do I... He's saying, well, yeah, this... Why? Tell me what I get out of this, God. It's not like, God, what do you get? Because right, we were singing that song, like, my life is just one big outpouring to you. You get it all. You have my heart. You have my soul.
Yeah.
You have all I own. And because we have some sense of God's grace and his mercy, and we understand that he's the subject. We're not.
Yeah.
He's the point. And that just, it just was one of those moments where it just jumped off the page at me. It's like, start with a wrong view. You have a wrong approach to life, and it's what about me? And then you can, man, you worm that into marriage where a spouse is going, well, what do I get out of this? Right. I'm not getting what I want to get out of this. And it's like, well, it must mean that you don't have an eye on eternity, because in eternity, you're going to stand before the Lord, and he's going to want to talk to you about being a servant who did really well.
Right. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. I know in verse 4, right after verse 3, I wrote down just the word boomer. And the reason I did, it says, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. And, you know, boomer's kind of been that term that the millennials are kicking around as they kind of poke fun at some of the older generations, you know.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking to myself that if we take a step back, there's been a lot of social progress made, and you know, one generation thinks that they have it, and then the other generation thinks they have it, and Gen X is kind of stuck in the middle, realizing I'm Gen X, that we actually have it both better than both millennials and boomers, but no, I'm just joking. But you know, I think each generation thinks they are doing better, but if you look at it, of all the technological advance that we've done, I mean, look at what we're doing here. 5 years ago, if this happened, this would have been a nightmare getting to, just to stream this. But people aren't happier.
No.
They're not more content. They aren't more satisfied. There's more depression with prosperity. And I just really was thinking about, none would argue that the human race is better off. And yet generation after generation goes and comes and thinks that they're doing things better, but they are just as dissatisfied, discontent, searching for meaning, which is essentially what these first few chapters are just relaying about Solomon. So I just kind of wrote boomer there because I'm thinking it is human nature to try to find and try to go, hey, we got it.
Yeah.
This is what's good, and go from there. So,
Chris, anything on that same spot?
No, you know, we have a tendency to think that we have the answers that the past generation didn't have, right? And the writer of Ecclesiastes chapter 1 even says there's nothing new under the sun. How many times have we, sitting around as a staff, talked literally about that you know, old things become new, new things are not, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's talking about the fact that that things might be spun different, they might be wrapped different, but the reality is that we're always kind of in the same place. If we're not vertically focused, we're constantly pressing against the game of life. And when we do that, we always end up on the losing side of it.
Yeah. Well, the bleak view of, you know, the under the sun view of the world, I don't have a starting point that's beyond me. Everybody's in the same situation. They're all looking at it. It gets so bleak, and the generation goes to generation. The sun rises, the sun goes down. hastens to the place where it rises. And then he goes into this thing really talking about creation, and yet without an eye on eternity and without an eye on the eternal God who is the creator of these things, life is monotony.
Yeah.
And rather than looking at the, like I was thinking about that again this morning, like the seasons, the way the sun crests the horizon, everything about the way the universe moves and turns is so phenomenal. It's so spectacular that it's like, that is a glorious thing. But yeah, when you don't have an eye on that, like creation without God is monotony in a way. It's just like, oh, sun rises, the sun sets, what am I doing in between? And I know you quoted the same guy I was reading, you know, the only piece of furniture, we had two pieces of furniture, the cradle and the coffin, yeah, right? When things are that bleak, it's like, well, yeah, this is what it is. Everybody gets the cradle and everybody gets a coffin, and that's all we have. And yeah,
it's depressing.
It is pretty depressing.
Yeah, and what I was thinking too, and I wrote this down, routine, it can be a joyful thing to wake up and make your wife a cup of coffee. If you're not trying to find your personal meaning mm-hmm. in that. Right. And I feel like the routine that he's describing, the bleakness, is also the routine that you go, man, I'm just here again. I'm 42 doing the same thing. Nothing's changed. I'm no better off than I was. I am a nobody. And it's just happening again. And that idea of just rote, mundane, can actually be the thing that leads us to endless, insatiable desires. And we're going to read and that's what I wrote an arrow to, is when God's beautiful things become routine and just kind of like boring, then we're like, well, I think I need to seek some pleasure. Or I need to be a philosophical, wisdom-seeking, or I need achievement.
Yeah.
Because we've just kind of got
lost. Well, he runs it through, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He talks about, I sought wisdom. I gave myself to finding out everything and knowing everything. And then I gave myself to pleasure. And then I gave myself to possessions. And at every end, it's like, it is insatiable. There is no end. And, you know, I was thinking, too, because we have this sense of, well, what do I measure myself against? Like,
right.
We can be so unhappy because what we're doing isn't what somebody else is doing. And how could I ever be really find meaning in this because that person's doing that, instead of going, no, actually, my meaning in this, it has nothing to do with that. If this is where God has me right now, I have ultimate meaning wrapped up in who he is, his great care for me. And so once we lose sight of how am I going to process life, well, then we're really reduced to ground level stuff.
Yeah.
And the ground level stuff has no mercy to it at all.
Tear us up.
And people will they'll just look down on you from where they are but they're just as wrecked and as miserable because they have nothing going on, and they got to just walk over another few bodies to get a little further, hoping they're going to get what they want. So I think that even as Christians, we can do that, right?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Even as Christians. Yeah.
I think even just to personalize this, my fear you said you look over and you see another person doing this or that. Yeah. But there's a darkness to thinking, having a fear of not meeting your own expectations.
Yeah.
Like, here I am, waking up again to do this. And there's this darkness that can be almost like a FOMO, fear of missing out. And even in a Christian sense, mm-hmm. like, I haven't achieved what I thought I could be. I'm here doing the same thing again. I'm just a mom wiping butts at home, or I'm just a dad. It could be ministry related too.
Sure,
I'm like,
can.
I'm just teaching the same stinking Bible study again, and I haven't achieved who I thought I was going to be. And it's a dark place that I think Christians, I'll speak for myself.
Yeah.
I can get in that. Yeah. And I can start to think to myself like he's thinking, what's the point? I've tried my best.
People are becoming, your brothers and sisters in Jesus become a hindrance to you becoming, oh, if it wasn't for these people, if this was only done like that, or if we could only, and you just start filling in, it's like, well, everything in the church becomes your problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's all their fault. Chris,
I mean, as you guys are talking, it really boils down to it's an identity issue more than anything else, you know, and talking about how this could go a million different ways in our time of discussion. And right when we're talking about how we're comparing ourselves to other people, we're looking at our lives now, and we look at, you know, where we are currently and what's happening in the world that we're in our state, in our nation, et cetera, in our own city. And obviously we've begun to use social media for really what it is purposed for, and that is getting information out, staying connected, et cetera. But one of the things that we see, that we have seen, is that when it was originally created, it was for connectivity, but it became something else.
Yeah.
It became, I'm looking at your social media page and looking at the life that you are now putting out, and I'm desiring to have that same life.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly trying to put up a presentation of something that's not a reality.
Yeah.
And it's distressing to me that it's not that, because that's the life I want to have. And that's the life I want people to think I have. And so in a sense, the Facebooks and the Instagrams, when they're being used in that way, is really like Ecclesiastes in that sense. In the end of it, you find it's all vanity.
Yeah.
It's all meaningless, because it's just a facade of something. It's a true lie in that sense.
You know, the idea of what is success? Do you actually ever get success? All that tied into the lie that, no, this is all there is.
Right.
And by the way, you can be so successful, but at the end, you got nothing. And the truth of the gospel tells us something totally differently, right? Like it says, I love it in Hebrews 6, verse 10 in the New Living Translation, for God is not unjust. He'll not forget how hard you have worked for him. Work for him, right?
Right.
Like, what do I get out of this? Well, if that's your life, you're going to end up one point where people are going, thank you very much. We're done with you.
Yeah.
See you. And here's your whatever. Thanks for your 50 years. See you later, you know?
Yeah.
But with the Lord, if we're starting with what does he get from me, then at the end he goes, oh, you don't understand. I never forgot anything you did for me. And I'm going to reward. I just love that so much. He won't forget how hard you've worked for him and how you have shown your love to him by caring for other believers as you do. Right. And how it changes the whole mindset. It's like, not what do I get? It's like, how do I serve others for God? He put me here to bear his image in the world. And again, I think of this whole, the situation that we're living in right now, to think like, this is our moment where we can really show that we actually do believe in forever, and that we'll stand before the God of eternity one day. And an answer for the way we lived in COVID-19, our values in it, and that we could actually like not be so afraid of serving somebody if it might endanger me, right?
Because the opposite of that, like the human mentality without the Lord is, I remember a while ago I was talking to Bobby Dodge, and he was talking about when there's world wars or wars, the nation comes together, right? We come together as a people. When there's natural disasters, floods, fires, we come together as a people. But when there's things like this, pandemics, all of a sudden, now you are my enemy, or you are my enemy. I'm going to get the toilet paper before you do, right? And it really changes that perspective. And God is saying, no, it's not about that. It's about sacrificing and serving and loving. And we would call it, you know, the world would say, well, that's unbalanced. Well, Jesus was unbalanced.
Yeah.
Right? Paul was unbalanced. He was constantly thinking about serving God and serving other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was about. Even in a time when it was, you know, when he was living, when the disciples were living, when Jesus was there, they lived in a time that was even worse than this.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't a pandemic, but there was an epidemic of oppression that was taking place. And they were constantly thinking about how we can encourage people to not look, you know, outwardly, but to look upwardly. Not to look inwardly, but to look vertically, constantly. And I think that was something that was really good to kind of look at as we're looking through Ecclesiastes as well.
Yeah.
John, how about you? What's the next stuff you got?
You know, the next stuff I have is what I wrote was, when I am trying to find meaning outside of God himself, I will attempt to find it in my philosophy, in pleasure, or in what I achieve. And I just go, wow, that's dangerous for me personally. Because I think It's just going to happen if we try to find meaning outside of who God has made us and find contentment in that. We are going to go somewhere else. We're going to find pleasure,
right.
And we're going to find. And it doesn't even have to be bad, innately sinful.
No,
it could be building a church. It could be traveling on a missions trip. It could be
benevolence.
It could be anything. And I do think that it's interesting that there's like these three categories, right? And some of them, the first category being wisdom, almost like a philosophical prowess, or you know what I mean? Just really thinking things through, because there's a man out there that, or a woman out there that they're never going to fill their lives with just pleasure, or drugs, or sex, or you know, traveling to Colorado to snowboard every, you know what I mean? They're just not pleasure seeking. They're more philosophical and wise. They almost scoff at that person that's just wrapped up in pleasures and you know, there's those three categories, and each one of them is really like a siren, you know, drawing even as Christians us in to say, hey, don't miss out. Come here, come over here. And it attracts different personalities. And it's kind of like, you know, I can't even remember all the numbers with Enneagram, but there's like three here, you know, so I'm keeping a little bit more focused. But you just go, wow, I have a bit of me in every one of those. And I wrote that down. There's a little bit of me in every one of those that, like, if I am not careful in my life, and it happens, I'm going to go, well, I'm distracted and I want to start achieving something. So instead of just being content with the simplicity of loving God and my family, I'm going to go pour myself into achieving something.
Yeah.
And then it's empty.
Right.
And then there's regret. And then there's like, well, what am I doing this for?
Yeah.
So that was the next thing that I wrote. It was just identifying those three things that are definitely going to be a siren to pull our efforts and attention, money, whatever it is, just so that we don't feel meaningless.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I can articulate this, but finding, like, because there is no, you're it's all ground level process.
Yeah.
You're looking at what everybody around is scrambling for to find meaning in life. And so when it goes to, you know, the wisdom, the philosophical, the academic, the knowledge, and then you get to pleasure, and then you get to your possessions. That those are like just deep pits, right? And you're trying to pull up something out of it, and there's a rock at the bottom of it, right?
Yeah.
But on the other end is the eternal one, whose love is from everlasting. He's loved us with a love that's everlasting. His mercies are from everlasting, and he has this unceasing supply of everything that could satisfy and gratify the heart of man.
Yeah.
And yet we're dropping a bucket a mile down to hope to pull out and there's a lot in the bucket the first couple times. And I was talking to Aaron Redfield about this, and he was saying, man, you do not know how many professional musicians are sitting in a hotel room tonight not wanting to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
He goes, because on the front end, when they were really coming on, and the record company was there, and there was the potential of selling records, and then they were selling records, and they're getting from the crowd everything they ever thought they could get by playing their music, and they're doing what they were made to do, right? They were created with the ability to do those things, but there comes that time when the reciprocity starts to go negative on it, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like all these guys with the gajillion barrels of crude oil sitting there with no market for them. And he says that when that happens, he goes, those guys go to their room at night and they just don't want to wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
But then on the other side, here's God who inhabits eternity. Nothing can contain him. And he's going, the love that you can't contain my love.
Yeah.
If you just would just get yourself understanding that I'm the point.
Yeah,
there's more of me than you could ever have.
Right.
So, and that's the, and again, I'm so much know that there are symptoms in my life when I'm dropping the bucket in the wrong well, instead of having my hand going like this, looking up. So feel free anytime to know when you're going, hey, do you hear the rocks that you're hitting on the bottom?
Yeah.
You know, really that much rope, Richard, you're still dropping it down that far.
And Satan greases that rope, right?
Oh, yeah.
We're trying to pull it up and we're working harder. So hard just to get that thing. And then all the while, you think of that verse that says in 2 Timothy there that that godliness with contentment
is great gain.
And all we would have to do is go, I just need to be content with what God's given me. And I don't have to pleasure, philosophy, achievement, or possession. I don't have to be trying to pull up a bucket that's the line is greased and there's no way to win. It's a big joke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like that, the oil, or remember the guy that had like 10,000 cases of hand sanitizer? It's like, yeah, you know, you're hosed now.
Yeah.
And now you really have no meaning.
So, man.
It reminds me of Matthew 6:33 too, right? Seek first the kingdom of God.
Conditions are sitting in a hotel room tonight, not wanting to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
He goes, because on the front end, when they were really coming on, and the record company was there, and there was the potential of selling records, and then they were selling records, and they're getting from the crowd everything they ever thought they could get by playing their music, and they're doing what they were made to do, right? They were created with the ability to do those things, but there comes that time when the reciprocity starts to go negative on it, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like all these guys with the gajillion barrels of crude oil sitting there with no market for them, and he says that when that happens, he goes, those guys go to their room at night and they just don't want to wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
But then on the other side, here's God who inhabits eternity. Nothing can contain him. And he's going to love that. You can't contain my love.
Yeah.
If you just would just get yourself understanding that I'm the point.
Yeah,
there's more of me than you could ever have.
Right.
So, and that's the, and again, I'm so much know that there are symptoms in my life when I'm dropping the bucket in the wrong well,
instead of
having my hand going like this, looking up. So feel free anytime to know when you're going, hey, do you hear the rocks that you're hitting on the bottom?
Yeah.
You know, really that much rope, Richard, you're still dropping it down that far.
And Satan greases that rope, right?
Oh, yeah.
We're trying to pull it up and we're working so hard just to get that thing. And then all the while, you think of that verse that says in 2 Timothy there that godliness with contentment
is great gain.
And all we would have to do is go, I just need to be content with what God's given me. And I don't have to pleasure, philosophy, achievement, or possession. I don't have to be trying to pull up a bucket that's the line is greased and there's no way to win. It's a big joke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like that. The oil, or remember the guy that had like 10,000 cases of hand sanitizer? It's like, yeah, you know, you're hosed now.
Yeah.
And now you really have no meaning.
Man.
Yeah. It reminds me of Matthew 6:33 too, right? Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And then the promise is, and all these things will be added unto you.
Yeah.
The things that are needed and profitable for your life.
Yeah.
Doesn't even mean that we're going to live in excess by any means, but God knows the things we have needed before we even ask. The Bible even tells us that, you know, he's a good father.
Yeah.
And like a good father, he'll always give us blessing, you know, in that sense.
Yeah. And that's the exact opposite of what do I gain?
Right.
Yeah.
It's the exact opposite of the opening, his opening salvos. What does a man gain?
Right.
You know? Well, that's not the point. What do I gain?
Right.
So,
you know, I think it's interesting too that to recognize and admit and verbalize as Christians that we're all haunted sometimes by thoughts of not adding up to anything.
Yeah.
Because that's really what drives us to go back to that well and try to pull something up of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's okay. And I wrote this down because we're driven and haunted by discontentment or thoughts of not adding up or that our life has been a waste. And as you read, I don't want to skip too far down so we can go back, but as you read in the middle of the chapter, in verse 11, he says, then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after the wind. There was nothing to be gained under the sun. And I don't know. I think it's good for us, not only as Christians, but even as leaders. You know, people look at other people and think, oh, they got it nailed. They know what they're doing. They know what they were called to do. They know... And I would have to say, just for myself, I've sat in meetings and thinking, I'm never going to be who I thought I was going to be. And we're haunted by that, and we're tempted to go back to that well of that empty bucket that's greased, and it's just a siren that's going to trick us to try to pull it up for more.
Yeah.
And it gives us compassion and an ability to look around and go, oh, man. And almost an encouragement for us to truly find contentment in the simplicity of what God's called us to do. And if it's, you know, in ministry, if it's 10 people there,
yeah,
then praise the Lord. If it's 1,000, praise the Lord. In business, if it's this, or as a mom, or as a nurse, or as an influencer, or whatever it is, like, God, you know, let's be honest with that haunting of, I don't want to end up wasting my life.
Right.
But also be an example of contentment.
Well, I think, and that is, you know, you use the word influence, like in social media, there's a metric for it.
Right? Yeah, right.
Right? How many followers do you have? And when you get this number of followers, you are now an official influencer, and people are chasing you, paying you to just do what you did. Right?
Yeah.
Right. But
I don't know too much about that.
Well, yeah.
I got 2 followers, right? Actually 6.
Yeah,
Roman, fair. Olivia.
Yeah.
So, your kids, yeah.
Yeah.
What happens if they stop following?
Yeah, they won't, because I feed them.
Well,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay.
You're talking about the metrics of influence.
The metrics of influence, but I think that we can't even begin to fathom the metric of influence in kingdom terms when we actually live lives that say, it's not about what gain is it for me, it's what does God want from me?
Amen.
And as we actually live that way, it's not talking about that way, because obviously, you know, we can look at church culture and go, maybe it doesn't work that way. You know, it's the theory, and it may even be, you know, they might even have like the core values of in fact, in my last cohort meeting, there was language used like our organizational values, and I was thinking about, like, I don't know if I think even use those mm-hmm. words, organizational yeah. values, like, but we do have values,
right.
But I don't even think of it. I just think, like, are the things that we're saying from this vantage point, and the content we are trying to communicate as much and as often and in as many ways possible, does it actually look like it? And when they do, it's like people are going to go, how come you're not? I'm a beggar looking for bread, right? Mm-hmm. Where did you eat that you're not doing this anymore? And you can go, well, I was that beggar once, and I found a guy who has bread.
Yeah.
And it's actually, he is the bread. And because he's the bread, I'm not looking around for any other supply. And now, but this is where the guy who has the bread, he has me here.
Yeah.
This is where he has me. And
I'm
that's
satisfied.
Not, yeah. Bread, and yeah. But we all struggle with the,
totally.
I'm satisfied, but not so much today.
Yeah, sure.
And that's a real deal. I mean, as guys that are in ministry, you know, we understand it, because, you know, we watch somebody else's thing that they're doing, and I go, dang, that was really good.
Yeah. He's got more than 6 followers.
I was thinking about even yesterday, you know, we talked about joy, you know, so yeah. often in yesterday's message. In fact, 33 times, by the way, you mentioned the word joy, and 66 times you mentioned Jesus, by the way. That was awesome.
Oh, wow.
So, but I was thinking, one of the questions was, you know, if we're walking with Jesus, he's the meaning of life, and in him, in his presence is the fullness of joy. And one of the questions was, do we lack joy? Mm-hmm. And I said that, you know, this afternoon, which was yesterday, I'm going to spend the time just thinking about, you know, my walk with the Lord and my attitude of life and what's going on in my heart. And just thinking about all of those things, going, okay, what is the thing that really saps us of joy? Is really when we get our eyes off of God's purpose and God's plan and Jesus himself in our lives. Like you're talking about how we get to that point where we're looking around going, my life isn't what I expected to be. Being 47 years old, why have I not reached this pinnacle? I tried this and it didn't work. I tried that, it didn't work. And I have all these great ideas, but nothing ever comes to fruition. I look down the street and the same guy is doing the same thing I've already tried and it worked for that guy, mm-hmm. you know? And then we have a tendency to kind of get, like you said, we're starting to dig down into that well.
Yeah.
And it's getting pretty deep, right? And we lose perspective. We lose connection with the Lord because we're no longer walking in his presence.
Yeah.
And we mentioned identity earlier. The fact that that's really where it is, finding our our identity in him, that in his presence we find refreshment. In his presence we find the fullness of joy. In his presence we find the abundance of life. In his presence is where we get all of our needs met, where we have no other need. And that's really the answer to all of this stuff, is making sure that we are, that we're vertically in a healthy position. Because we can look around and it looks like everything's falling apart.
Yeah.
And we look at ourselves in the mirror and we're like, man, you're falling apart, you know? Yeah.
And so, you know, when we sing that song, and it's from one of the most famous parts of the scriptures, right? Psalm 23, God is my shepherd. Yeah. I won't be wanting. I won't be wanting.
Right.
And I think for us as Christians, the we're doing this balancing thing between what is divine aspiration. What do I just aspire to because of the call of God in my life, mm-hmm. and the hand of God in my life and the gift of God operating in my life? How does that not become raw ambition?
Sure.
Right? And I think that the balancing point is probably the point where we are saying, no, because God is my shepherd, I'm not wanting. Therefore, I can aspire to do for him, instead of having the ambition, which to me is more like, what does man gain for all of his efforts under the sun? And I think that's, again, it's something that, you know, I mean, if people want to be praying for something for us as guys pastoring Metro, it would be like, pray for these guys that they would just always be God's, their shepherd. Yeah. And they're not wanting for anything else. Because once we're wanting, you know, then we're a mess, because it's just the dominoes start falling from there forward. And yeah,
because you're gonna get it, you're gonna go get it somehow.
Yeah, right?
And if it's not by way of what the Lord has for your life, you're gonna go get it, and it's not gonna be good.
It's collateral damage.
It's
everywhere.
Big time, because you're gonna pursue. I heard some guys say that if you can't celebrate somebody getting what you really wanted, then you got a problem.
Yeah,
right.
And that rings true in my life. I know it's humbled me just to think that, because yeah. I'll be like, hey, you know, I'm feeling like monkey in the middle right here. You know, you guys are pastors and stuff like that. And so am I, but there's times where we look at each other and we go, hey, why can't I? And if you can't celebrate what somebody else has, you have a problem.
Yeah.
Cause you're not content or satisfied with what the Lord.
Well, let me segue from there too.
Yeah.
Further on in this chapter, verse 8, all things are full of weariness and a man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with the seeing. There we go, the bottomless well, right? Yeah. Nor is the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what's going to be, and what's been done is what will be done. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new? It is already, it's been already in the ages before us. And how there's no remembrance of the former things. And I think what you see in there is that under the sun existence, it's like there is nothing changing here.
Right. Nothing.
There is nothing that's going to change in this. But the deal is that world, that worldview that says this is what it is, there's nothing outside of me, there's nothing beyond this here and now thing, that is going to unravel. That little 7-minute podcast that you sent today,
oh, yeah.
That conversation between Keller and Carson and Piper,
yeah.
I'll quote just a moment of Carson's thing there, where he talks about like history, the here and now, I'm going to use those words, the here and now is going to unravel. I liked how he said that. What man calls history right now, this time, space, existence that we're in, it's going to unravel as the Lord of history ushers in a new heaven, a new earth that will be forever new. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not going to go old. It's not going to be the same old, but it's going to be this incomprehensible. It's constantly new.
Yeah.
It's the further up and further in of the Chronicles of Narnia.
Right.
It's so mind-blowing, right? But because we can so easily get stuck in the here and now, what happens is we can just be going, well, like, if this is what it is, will it ever change?
Right.
And I think that because the whole premise of the life under the sun worldview is exactly the opposite of the forever view, that no, this is just, it's not the end of the story. So as futile as things look, like if this is what it is right now, like everybody's going, what's the world going to look like post-COVID-19? Oh my gosh, what's it going to be? And it's like, it's not the end of the story.
Right.
It isn't the end of the story. No, it will change because we're serving a God who has a plan. Right. And so our job is to like dive into, if I don't see his eternal plan and his purposes as wrapped up in this, I'm done. I just buckle, and it's like, I give up. It's just gonna be this. It's gonna be this bad. Yeah. And think of people, like I'm trying to think of, like, how do our lives speak to a COVID-19 world right now about, like, no, this isn't the end.
Right.
We have a hope and a future. So.
Yeah, totally. You know, I wrote a couple of questions. Do you mind if I ask them?
Not at
all. Is that an okay time?
Even though you got 6 followers? I'll take a question.
This is for both of you guys. I wrote a couple questions because I know that when life feels meaningless and rote and repetitive, that's when we need to be on guard, right? And we're tempted to give up on what God's asked us to do because it's like, I'm doing the same thing, Lord. I've done this. I was obedient and nothing changed. I didn't get any further. What do you do when you feel that your life hasn't added up to what you thought it'd be? As a Christian man, I'm not talking about even a secular worldview right now. Mm-hmm. Just as Christian men, what would you tell people who are listening right now that are like moms, dads, business owners, students, all walks of life? What do you do when you really struggle with feeling like your life hasn't added up?
I can go dark.
Yeah.
Like, not like zero dark, 30 dark, but I can go dark, right? I can just get in a funk.
Well, tell us what you think we should do then.
And, well,
yeah,
you talk to somebody about it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And you actually open your feelings up and you know, these are my struggles. Like,
yeah.
And then you come to, well, what's it supposed to, it's back to what has man gained.
Yeah.
It really comes down to, well, what were you expecting to get?
Right.
What are your expectations? If what you're expecting is this should lead to this, should lead to this, because that is the way the world works. You know, the under the sun life, it's like, if you do this, then the next step is this, then the next step is this, and the next step is this. And all of us have some measure of, well, I did do this, and then that brought me to this. And by, you know, we're as good Christian guys and as pastors, we're factoring in grace and
totally.
The providence of God and all those things.
Yeah.
Because I could look at you, John, and go, dude, this guy has done this. He came up, and he was going to make tents and be in the ministry, and that absolutely fell through. And what he did was he went and got a contractor's license, and he started with nothing. And now he has JNT, and he's an established guy. He's an accomplished guy. He's a skilled guy. He's a great employer. He's a great husband. He's a great dad. He's got all these things. But I know you hit those places where you just go, this is it. I did this, 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 and this. But where's that?
Totally.
And I can tell you, I feel those same things. I hit those same things. Even though you're looking going, well, I wish I was doing what you're doing. Well, I had that season when I was loading trucks. You know, going, is this it? This is the end of the line? And it's like, well, no, it wasn't. But God goes, you can tell somebody how to be happy loading trucks.
Yeah.
Well, you should load a few trucks.
Right.
So that you can have something to say to them, right?
Sure.
But we all hit those places. And so I think one of the most important things is, and we've tried to make it a policy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when we meet, we should be able to go, before we get to agenda and what boxes we need to check today in our meetings, we try to make sure that we're saying, I'm not good.
Yeah.
Or I'm frustrated with these things and have the freedom to wear them, in a visible way.
Being transparent.
Yeah.
Not falling into that trap of I got to make this up.
Yeah.
Chris, I got one for you.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's really all about me. All about me.
Yeah, exactly, right? We really don't have this planned out. So what do you do when you feel that all you do is work and toil and you're actually not achieving your goal?
Oh, that's a great question. I cry.
Yeah. Wait. Here, let me put my mask on.
Your mask
on. I can give you a hug.
No, you touched him, John. Yeah. It wasn't the breathing. You just touched him.
I think all of us have been there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All of us have been there. And I think I actually was meeting with someone recently, and they were talking about going on the mission field, and they said, what should I expect? And I said, I would love to be able to tell you don't have any expectations.
Yeah.
Because the reality is that what you think in your mind and what you're actually going to experience is radically different. Many times God kind of does something to get us in that place, and then we get there, and then it's like totally different than we thought it was. But it's always amazing and, sure. and wonderful, and it has its challenges, all things do. But when you get to a place to answer your question, when you get to a place where you feel like all you have to do is toil and work, and mm-hmm. you just feel like you're kind of getting lost in in just the effort of stuff. And I think that doesn't matter what, you know, if you're pulling weeds, if you're signing contracts, if you're, you know, hammering nails, if you're coding, if you're designing web pages, or if you're sitting there, you know, sitting in an office and you're doing business aspect of church, taking care of just the practical aspects of church. Those things hit all of us at different times.
Yeah.
And when I'm in that place, I always try to go back to the verse that talks about whatever you do in word or in deed, do all to the glory of the Lord, and really check my heart in that moment and go, okay, I'm frustrated, I'm upset, I'm feeling unappreciated or you know, I'm not experiencing what I thought I would experience.
Yeah.
And I try to go back to that verse. And I have a wonderful wife.
Yeah.
You know, all of us do. And how many times we've talked about how our wives have really spoken into our lives. Yeah. And she really is able to speak into my life and say, I think you're looking at this the wrong way.
Yeah.
I think you need to take a step back from this. Yeah. And then, you know, she lovingly corrects me and then lovingly prays over me and then just supports me through it. And so that's going back to what you talked about, talking to someone in that sense. And all of us have our wives that we can do that, our friends that we can do that with. But that's the main thing, is going back to what is having an eternal perspective. What is God doing? What is God asking of you to do? And then trying to do it with excellence the best that you possibly can. Yeah. If this is what the Lord has for you, do it with excellence.
Yeah. I think that goes back to what you were saying at the very beginning, like, who's it for?
Right.
Who am I doing that? Who am I counting? Who am I counseling for? Who am I working for? And almost exactly what you said at the beginning.
So, and David had those issues. We read through the Psalms, and David's crying out to the Lord, going, Lord, this is not what I thought it was going to be. Right, this is not what I signed up for.
Yeah,
you know, this is totally different than I expected. But he's calling out to the Lord, and he allows the Holy Spirit to minister to his heart. And that's just waiting upon the Lord, being real and honest, but waiting upon the Lord is a huge aspect of that too.
Yeah. And again, what we're not able to see in our own lives, even when we're saying what we're going through. You know, like to be able to, I remember Val one day, we were taking a walk and she says, so like, what's going on? And it was like, I never forget, we were just past the entrance to you know, where we live. And we were just heading up that street. And I just said, I don't think I'm clinically depressed, but I'm depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and she tried to get at it. And I really couldn't, you know, but that someone would listen and say, will try to tell me about it.
Yeah.
And then as you start to work through it, well, then you come to a place where it's like, and sometimes you just need somebody that's outside of it. Like, you know, everybody that's this close or whatever, you got to go see somebody and sit down and say, I just feel like I don't want to leave the house because and it's like, there's no clinical problem with you. It's just, you hit that place.
Right.
And I think it's great to have, to know that there are places that we just can't see our way through, even though we believe the things we're talking about right now, the truths that we're dealing with, we believe them, but everything about inside of us is fighting against reality is saying that's not true, which is what he's saying all the time.
Yeah.
Well, look at it, I'm just saying reality, like, yeah. Whatever about this forever, whatever about God, this is reality, this is what it is. I think we all can hit that. And I think again, we need people that will speak the truth and love to us.
And I think, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's a time in ministry years ago, and Richard was, you know, you were really helpful in that period of time, you know, back in the day, but there was a time where I went through a really hard time. And every time I would talk with someone, and the Lord had brought, you know, several people into my life to be counselors and just to be listeners and to help me through that time. And I remember one time talking to a guy, and I said, this is what it feels like. He said, do you hear what I'm saying? I'm like, I'm hearing it, but it's not making a difference. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, well, this is what it feels like. It feels like I'm out in the middle of the ocean and I'm floating around by myself, and it's cold and dark, and I'm looking up, and there's this this ocean liner in front of me, and everyone is partying on the deck. And I'm screaming out, I'm drowning, I'm drowning. And someone throws to me one of those donuts with a rope on it. And just as I reach out to grab it, when it hits the water, it dissolves. Mm. And I said, that's what it feels like. And he goes, I know it feels that way, but it's not true. Mm. And I'm going to stay here with you until you're able to grab onto something solid. And that was huge for me in my life.
Yeah, I think both of you guys had great, great answers for that. And I think that we really do need to be transparent. But I was just recently, as you guys were talking, it really kind of, I think we also can, especially as husbands and whatnot, I think we can avail ourselves to our kids and our spouse and the people around us.
Serve them.
In a way that allows them to feel safe in being vulnerable to us. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important because we all feel the way Solomon writes in those chapters, Christian, non-Christian. And I think there's a way that we can pretend that we should just kind of put on our boots and keep on walking. Yeah. And we don't actually, because you both said transparency is part of what got you through. Mm. But sometimes we act as Christians as though that's not a part of our lives, and we don't invite or allow other people to be that transparent with us. Yeah. We're kind of just posting the perfect life, perfect wife, perfect. Actually, my wife is perfect, so that doesn't fit. But
you just said that because she's here.
But you know, we have to act like, and that people could come to us and say, "Hey, I'm going to be vulnerable with you and transparent."
Yeah,
I think that will help a lot.
Yeah,
I agree.
So,
well, good stuff.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to turn this way. Well, I hope our conversation was a welcome conversation in your home tonight. I hope that you could see that when we read the Bible, we read it just like you read it. We, even though God has called us to be pastors and teachers and to lead the flock of God and feed the flock of God, I hope you can see that we actually do wrestle with the truths of Scripture exactly like you wrestle with them, and sometimes maybe not even as well as you do, and that we are as dependent upon the truth, and there's going to come a point where everything that we were talking about this evening, there comes a point where we're going to have to say, well, what God said is the truth, and I'm going to hold on to that. I'm going to hold on to that, and I'm actually going to let that be the lens through which I will interpret the world that I'm living in. I'm not going to let my circumstances define God, but rather I'm going to let God define my circumstances for me. So there are no questions online for you guys tonight. Obviously, we were asking and answering questions tonight. Hopefully, they have stirred something in your heart to have a conversation about these very things. And we're just going to spend time now, and we're going to close in one final song, and then we'll wrap up the evening together.